You're listening to a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk. Number 475.
Hello and welcome back to the Outdoor Station and part 7, the concluding episode from the series recorded during the 2018 TGO Challenge. The 200-mile walk from west to east coast of Scotland, organised by TGO Magazine. This episode covers the last 2 days and picks up after the social evening spent at Tarfside Village. Tarfside is a small Scottish community at the end of a very long road which welcomes challengers every year onto the sports field to camp for free. In return, we top up the coffers by visiting the Mason's Arms over the road, and this year they also added a barbecue to the liquid offerings which made for a lovely evening. Early in the morning, the dawn chorus is rich and varied. As the sun rises, the birds release their joyous, high-pitched song from above, whilst at ground level, the noise is somewhat less tuneful.
Six a.m. and at Tarfside, you can hear the dawn chorus beautifully coming through from above and from below, as people are restlessly turning on their mattresses and still heavy breathing from the previous night's exertions over at the Mason's Lodge. And it was a really good night too. They put on burgers last night from about six, and my little group certainly tucked into those rather than eat down at St. Drostan's. And that, with a little bit of liquid refreshment, helped the evening go well. I crawled into my tent, I think, around 10-ish, and I was disturbed about 12:30, 1 o'clock, as everybody else stumbled back in various forms of tiredness, I think is the right word. But I'm standing above the camping area in Tarfside currently, and I've just wandered around and counted about 65 to 70 tents, which isn't a bad showing really. So that's a good indication of the popularity of Tarfside on this particular night. It's probably the most popular night, and I'm sure in the next hour or so I can see various people walking to and from the toilets at the moment, so I'm sure over the next hour or so people will start to get up, stretch, perhaps make a brew before getting themselves together and heading off towards the retreat for breakfasts in various forms. So that's my early morning piece. It's lovely and relaxing here at Tarfside, I must admit. It is a nice finish of a couple of days. Looking over my head, the cloud cover is not particularly high at the moment. I can't see the tops of the surrounding hills. I can just see the pine cone memorial. It's on top of the one hill that you can see clearly from Tarfside. And all indications are at the moment today is going to be a fine day. But of course it can always change. But I doubt if anyone is bothered, as the next stop is the retreat, followed by the cafe at Edsel, and the pub next door, and the shop, and then over to the campsite at North Waterbridge for the last night before heading towards the coast and various finishing places that we all have in mind.
Well, it's just gone 1 o'clock and I'm taking the very gentle stroll towards Edsel now, along the farm track, and just saying it's a lovely transition from the hills and the highlands to rolling hills to the gentle flatlands and, unfortunately, civilization. Had a late start this morning, much later than would have liked. I was sort of ready by 7-ish, but we just sort of agreed a 9 o'clock start, and to be fair, by the time we left at 9, there couldn't have been more than half a dozen tents left on the site. But the site was left nice and clean, and then we all headed down to the retreat for breakfast. Now, it's 2 years since I've been to the retreat, and last time the breakfast was a smoothly oiled machine, but yeah, this year it seemed to be a little bit disorganized. Anyway, cutting a long story short, new chef, not quite ready for the onslaught of 70 people arriving all within an hour or so of each other, staff running around adding orders, chef not coping, chef not prepared to receive help by the sound of it, and so consequently it all went a little bit haywire. But not to worry, hey, it's the end of the TGO challenge, who's rushing? Fortunately, a few people were apparently getting disgruntled and disappointed having to wait an hour for a bacon sandwich, but hey, come on guys, it's the last 24 hours. Do you want to rush anything? So, in the end, by the time they got to us, we've made our orders for full breakfast, etc., etc. But by the time they got to us, they'd run out of eggs. They got through 60 eggs in the morning. And they run out of bacon. And they run out of sausages. And they said, the supply truck should be here any minute. And we sat there and said, look, hey, just tell us what we can eat and we'll eat it. No problem. So we all had sandwiches and some toast and tea and coffee, and that was enough. Everybody was happy. It's fine. No problem. No problem at all. And then, of course, just as we finished eating and getting up from the table, the supply truck arrived with all the next deliveries. So that was a bit amusing, really. Anyway, so as I say, a late start, and it's 1 o'clock now, and I say, I can't say I'm near Edsel. I think it's going to be another hour or so before we get to Edsel anyway. But by that time, all the early people, the people in a rush to get to North Waterbridge, I guess, will have passed through the cafe. So, a very small cafe in Edsel that works like Trojans. Amazing how many people they feed in a short period of time. So the wave goes on from the retreat cafe to the cafe in Edsel, and then the wave continues to North Waterbridge via the spa shop, where they probably buy them all out of sandwiches and treats and nibbles for tonight's little gathering. And tonight in North Waterbridge, well, it really depends on the weather. I've been there a few times now, and if the weather's warm enough, everybody's standing around chatting, you know, sharing food, having a laugh, reminiscing, making contacts, getting people's details. But if it drops just a few degrees, that's it, everybody's in their tent and the socialising is over. When the weather's terrible, it's always interesting to see the bemused look on the caravanners as they stare out through their windows. What on earth are all these unkempt, scruffy backpackers doing camping next to my caravan? And then by the time they wake up the following morning, we've all gone. But it is nice to have a good shower and wash up, etc., etc., before the sudden urge takes you to get down the road to wherever you might be finishing, St. Cyrus or the links or wherever. So, feeling 110% really, actually. Pretty good all round. Feet are fantastic, no problem at all with my feet. Been interesting the few times it has been really, really hot and walked on hardcore or road and stopped and just taken the shoes off and felt the heat coming off my feet. So you can imagine what it must be like if you've got heavy boots on and Gore-Tex lined boots, which don't let the heat out. So it's no wonder that people have been suffering probably more than normal actually with blisters this year. So I do feel sorry for them, because I do know what that's like to carry too big a pack, wear leather boots and walk in this weather when it's really glorious. Today, as I suggested earlier on, the weather has been perfect walking weather actually. Sort of hazy sunshine, quite a few clouds. I'm not too sure if the microphone's picking it up, but a cool breeze, nice chill on the body. I'm just walking in a merino base layer and it's absolutely perfect. Dry underfoot, apart from the occasional bit where the cattle have been gathering. It involves a little bit of skipping, but otherwise pretty good condition. Now, you may not hear the other three in the background. That's because, for some bizarre reason, Tony has led them up a path when I've taken the lower path, and I have no idea where they are. There's a wooded section which has all been cut down now. I remember the first year I did it, this wooded section was thick and we were walking under a canopy of trees, but it's all cut down now. And the path that I thought, oh, there they are, they've actually dropped down the bank and got onto the path and they're following me now. So there you go, that's what happened to them. Don't take the high path, take the low path. So as I was saying, yes, I'd lost them basically. They'd taken a high path and I thought, that's not right. So I can take the moral high ground, literally, and feel very superior about having correctly remembered the right path. Which all adds to the fun of the day and a little bit of banter, of course, when we get into Edsel and enjoy whatever luxurious items are placed before us, either food. The cafe is just a door or two away from the pub, so I'm not too sure which one will win on the appeal front, but I have a very good idea. So, I've not really interviewed as many people as I'd liked this year. Not really had the chance, to be honest. It's only yesterday at Tarfside I saw enough people to talk to, and there's a couple of people I really want to corner if I can before they have too much liquid refreshment when they get to the hotel at Montrose. Some interesting conversations about walking in different parts of the world and experiences. So if I can, I'll try and top this up with a few more interviews with people who've done this for the first time and perhaps joined us from overseas. In the meantime, I need to get through this gate.
This podcast is brought to you by backpackinglight.co.uk, a small UK independent helping you save weight and enjoy outdoor life more.
The walk from Tarfside to North Waterbridge offers a gentle transition from country to town, as every sense starts to reacclimatise to city life. Birdsong is replaced by the constant, distant roar of traffic. The aroma of heather and grass is replaced by aftershave and perfume of people you pass on the street. Instead of focusing your eyes on distant horizons looking for paths, you have to become aware of personal space on pavements or in shops as you maneuver around, still attached to your rucksack. It's taken me many years to find the best way to minimise that long, straight, dangerous road to North Waterbridge campsite and reduce it to one small stretch. However, with every footstep along that road, there's no denying, this is the road back to normal life.
Thursday morning, and North Waterbridge is slowly coming alive to the early morning dawn chorus of birds and heavy traffic. A lot of challengers are now awake and starting to get themselves together, packing up, mad keen to get to the coast and get it all over and done with. It's only 13 kilometres from here to the coast, so there's no great rush. And me and Tony Lee and Heather were all sort of chilling out another hour or so. Perhaps have a good shower. And by the time we get going around 9-ish, I would expect most people to have gone from here. I'd say there's probably the best part of 30, 35 tents on the North Waterbridge campsite. A fairly quiet night, a little bit of socialising, but certainly as soon as the chill hit the air, people were more than happy to get into their tents and get to sleep, get some shelter, get some warmth. So the last day of my 10th crossing. I have to say I've had a fabulous crossing, really. The weather makes it many respects, and only had a couple of days which are really frustrating or hard work. The rest of the time it's just been reasonable weather and good walking conditions. But as you can hear, the traffic here at North Waterbridge is just unbelievable, and it's a real wake-up call for reality and civilization, which we're returning to after a couple of weeks in the beautiful Scottish hills and mountains. Fascinates me, really, this campsite. It's probably got the best part of 60 or 70 static caravans, and this is where people come for a break to get away from it all. But it's right next door to the A5, and I really don't understand the appeal of thundering traffic. But you never know, other people's lives are all different, and they might be living in somewhere where traffic's even heavier than this. Anyway, as I say, 6:30, and I've just woken up, so I thought I'd just do a quick piece, and I'll catch you a bit later.
Ten:20, we've been going for an hour and 20 minutes or so, I think. Heading towards the usual route towards St Cyrus, and then we're going to veer off and finish at the Lynx Golf Course via a cafe, I'm told, which will be something to cheer us all up, I suppose. A dull, overcast day, cool breeze, everything's fine. Otherwise, no rain. Put the tent away dry, which is always a pleasure. Past a few gangs of people, Manchester crew, chilling outside of the road, frying up some food, and a couple of other people taking a rest as well. Certainly interesting mixed feelings now coming towards the end. Glad that I've completed the 10th and seeing it through, and I've been trying to reflect on the 10 crossings that I've done, all the different routes and the places I've been, and when people mention names I think, yeah, I'm sure I've been there, but I can't quite remember what it looks like or what it was like underfoot. So certainly is maybe more familiar with lots of areas in Scotland, certainly by name if nothing else, and I need to go back and look at my notes and photographs to remind myself of those particular times.
But it's interesting, the memories we're all sharing of different trips that we've done, it's usually the people and odd moments that make the memory that stick in your mind rather than the actual route sometimes. So as they say, it's all about the journey and the people that go to make that journey up rather than the destination. People were leaving really early this morning. Yeah, it beats me why. I really have no idea. What's the point of getting up at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock and heading off when there's only 13 kilometres to go? It's only 8 miles. Unless they're doing something spectacular. And certainly from Northwater Bridge, there's very little, anything spectacular you can do. So I can't see the point, really. The sooner you get into Montrose, the sooner you start spending money. So, such is life. So plodding up the hill of Morphy, and slowly getting closer. We're all sort of talking about the jobs we've got to do when we get back. Cut the lawns, do the cleaning, clean the stuff, dry the tent out, etc., etc. But of course, living in a rucksack for a couple of weeks, there's actually very little to do when you get back, apart from all the jobs around the house, which I'm sure are being listed off for me as I speak. But a lovely crossing, all in all. Really nice weather, and even the few days of miserable wet weather or the wind have long been forgotten. I thought I'd treat myself tonight and book into a hotel. The options are possibly camping at the park. They have a small area where you can put a few tents, but it depends who gets there first. And then the campsite is, I don't know, half a mile walk, which is a pain in the neck after a few beers. So I found a small hotel down the road that had a room free at a very affordable price. So I'm choosing that tonight, which means I can get on the train dry tomorrow, well rested, and more importantly, clean, and get myself nice and clean, ready for the long journey back. And I won't be home till 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, so long train journeys for me tomorrow. But at least I can charge my Kindle and sit back and enjoy some stories on that at the moment. Anyway, nothing else to report, really. Maybe I'll chat with the guys a bit later on, or hopefully a couple of other people at Montrose before the party begins, and we can get some other ideas of how other people's crossing has been. And here it is, the East Coast, Montrose on the links, on a glorious sunny afternoon at, what time are we? Just turned 1 o'clock. We've hit the beach, miles and miles of sandy beach, just behind the dunes. Hardly anybody on the beach whatsoever, apart from ourselves, myself and Heather. She's just getting her feet wet at the moment. And the challenge is over for 2018 and my 10th crossing. And I'm feeling pretty good, pretty good. But glorious weather, glorious sunshine. You wouldn't want to sit in it for very long unless you were out of the wind. But the cool breeze and the sunshine and the clear blue sky and the sound of the waves is just perfect. So we're just going to walk along now to the end where there's a slipway or something I can see just past the dunes. And then that should take us onto the golf course and then into Montrose proper. And then up to control and finding out what's going on with control and seeing all the news, catching up with faces, seeing who's dropped out, etc., etc. So congratulations, Heather, well done.
Thank you, Bob.
Well done, darling.
Thank you, thank you. What a wonderful finish, the sun's shining.
Yeah, it's glorious. That nice cool breeze. It's just nice to walk into that as we go to Montrose, yeah?
That's right. And I can feel some liquid refreshment coming on.
Can you really? Yes. Is it that sort of moment, is it?
I think so.
Excellent.
Whether it be tea or whatever takes your fancy.
Excellent. A little bit of what your fancy does you good, as they say. Right, we'll pick up on this a bit later on.
Arrival at the East Coast is a mixture of pleasure and disappointment. Pleasure to have completed your two-week task, and disappointment that it's all over. There's nothing more to do now than get on the bus and head for Control, who are based every year at the Park Hotel in Montrose. Here you get to meet the team who quietly track your progress and keep an ear out for anyone who may have lost their way for whatever reason. Before the evening's festivities began, I caught up with first-timers Ken Shaw from backpackinglight.se in Sweden and Niels Block from ultralightpedestrian.com in Denmark for their impression of the event and how the landscape compares to Scandinavia in general.
I like it. It's very accessible. If you compare to Scandinavia, for example, it's accessible. Everything's really close. You can get to the train. You can get your shoes on. No matter, it seems like it doesn't really matter where you live here. You can just get out in the outdoors quite easily here. So I like that. Yeah.
And what about the actual landscape itself compared to Scandinavian landscape? Listeners will be interested in how it compares if they're considering going and doing something in Scandinavia.
Yeah. Well, Scandinavia is a lot of woods, forest and so on, but if you go up to the northern parts of Sweden, then I would say it's very similar. Of course, Sweden has a little bit higher tops and so on. I think the peaks there are around 2,000, and there's several of them, and then you have everything down to 1,000 and so on. So very similar as far as the actual nature and the walk goes. And I would say, now, I haven't been to Scotland before, but what they say is Scotland's quite wet. Because my experience right now has been that Sweden is much wetter.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, we're still drying out, I suppose, from the recent wet. But, obviously, I think they're probably very similar, as you say. And what about, the similar things like the bogs and the heather and that sort of thing? Is it, again, similar?
It's very similar. Everything from the nature to the what kind of plants you find, it's spooky how similar it is, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. There's not much difference as far as the nature goes.
So how have you actually found the actual walk itself, then, going across the terrain from the west to the east coast? Because obviously you're going across quite a diverse landscape.
Yeah.
The walk itself, have you found that what you expected?
Well, like I said, it was drier, and we had a lot of luck with the sun. So,
Yeah.
So,
but the hills and the mountains?
The hills, yeah, it was about what I expected.
Okay.
It was what I was looking for. I liked it. There was parts where, yesterday, for example, we walked 35K, and it was just roads and forest, and that was kind of, that was a bit rough. But rather than that, it was about what I expected.
Okay. Now, when we met up in Tarfside, we were talking about the King's Trail.
Yeah.
And I'm interested, and I'm sure a lot of listeners will be interested in European walks and how perhaps the TGO compares to that underfoot. I mean, is it like for an easy trail, lots of manned huts, or are we talking tough going? You've got to be completely independent.
No, King's Trail is a pretty easy trail. It's got manned huts pretty much throughout. The King's Trail itself is actually quite long. You have the south and the north sections of the King's Trail, and most of the King's Trail is there's cottages the whole way, manned cottages and so on, and it's a fairly easy walk, the actual King's Trail, and I think most amateurs and beginners could do at least the northern section, say to Abisko and so on, which is like the peak of the King's Trail. So I would definitely say that it's far easier than Scotland, just that section of the trail. But like Scotland, you can pretty much do your own trails and go off trail and pretty much do what you want to do.
So. Now, I know you've got your own YouTube channel, backpackinglight.se.
That's right.
And in that, I was just looking at it before we met up again. You discuss the Swedish coast to coast.
Yeah.
What's that like as a walk?
Roads, lots of roads.
That's, oh, really?
Yeah, that's not... that's a very light trail. I would say with that one, you might get away with a tarp. And I mean, it's warm, it's dry, and it's long, and it's very harsh on the feet because there's a lot of pavement, asphalt, hard roads, and this kind of thing. So for me, it's not the best experience, the coast-to-coast Sweden. I would say if you're going to go to Sweden, there's a bunch of different trails. If you want forestry and variation, you would do something like Sörmlandsleden that starts in Stockholm and goes down, and it's about a 700-kilometer trail. And then you have northern Sweden, all the mountain trails and so on. Coast-to-coast, yeah, it's a good social hike, but it's... just it might not be the most exciting hike.
Okay. And the other one, I suppose, that's well known to us would be the Fjällräven Classic.
Yeah.
How does that compare? What's your view on that?
They don't really compare. Fjällräven Classic, because it's on the trail that it is, it's a very beautiful trail. It's an incredible scenery. But it's also, I would say the Fjällräven Classic is for complete amateurs. That just went to the shop, they just bought their first pair of hiking boots and they want to test them out. And that's kind of what Fjällräven gears that trail for, or that hike. So they give you food every 2 days, so you don't have to carry any of your food. Of course, that doesn't help if you're carrying 35 kilos on your back. It's still going to hurt, but yeah.
Okay. So ultimately then, have you enjoyed the challenge? Are you going to return?
Yeah, I'll return. I thought it was a lot of fun. I like... the social aspect, it's quite... in Sweden, when you go up to northern Sweden, you're alone. There's no pubs, there's no towns, there's nothing. And you basically go up there, at least the trails that I do, they're like that. But this one, you get into this just wild, messy kind of nature, just really enjoying it. Then you go down into a pub. It's surreal in a way, and just the camaraderie of the TGO, it's quite enticing, actually.
It's very unique, isn't
it? Yeah, it's very unique. It's very unique, because it's not... I would definitely not say the TGO is a beginner's trail. I mean, maybe you can make it, because you do plan your own trail, so maybe you can make it to being a relatively easy trail, but I wouldn't say that it's a beginner's trail. I would say you have to... have a little bit of experience before you go on something like the TGO.
Good, excellent. So, well, basically the final question, I always like to drop on people, bit of a surprise. What has been your best piece of equipment and your worst piece of equipment?
Best and worst. Oh, that's a good one. Best, I would have to say, is the Sierra Designs Flex Capacitor, the backpack. I was really surprised. I just wanted to give it a try, a real try. I've used it about 100 kilometers before, but I decided I needed to give it a real test, and... it's quite impressive. It holds weight really well. The worst, I don't really know if there's anything worse, but I would have to say my synthetic t-shirt that was, I just fell for the marketing. I've been doing wool for years, and I had to test something new. And it's the Hogloves limb. They have some kind of new lava technology, they call it, where it's not supposed to stink. It stinks. Yeah. I'm not impressed by that one. Yeah.
Oh, I've enjoyed it immensely. Well, it's hard not to with the weather and all, being as good as it was. I've never been to Scotland before. The closest I've been was Hadrian's Wall Trail a couple of years ago. And so I always wanted to come to Scotland and do the TGO from the first time I've heard about it. And I think maybe it was Chris Townsend who introduced me to it. So at one point, yeah.
So what are your thoughts on the actual terrain itself? Has it been tough? Has it been fairly easygoing compared to what you're used to?
I think it was more or less what I expected. I knew it would be wet and boggy, but even though you expect it to be, then when you're there and you sink into your knee, you go like, why did I do this? And then when a whole trail turns out to be like that, it sort of eats on your mentality. But I expected it, and it's just push on through. But it got better as you got further and further east. I thought it got better, but the landscape and nature was more or less what I expected. Beautiful, as I expected.
So I understand it's very similar to the Scandinavian landscape, and sort of I've covered that already in some respects. But what about the actual event itself and the sort of, you know, mountains 1 minute and socializing the next?
Well, I came in to do a solo hike actually, and then I hooked up with Ken Shaw from Backpacking Light and in Sweden, and then we sort of hit it off together, and we talked about, well, how social are we going to be, and maybe not, but then you meet people, and they turn up in all sorts of different places. All of a sudden, you round like a hill, and then there's some other TGO challenges, and. It's a bit like being on the Camino, actually, where everybody meets everybody and says, buen Camino, or hello, how are you doing, having a good day? And then you sort of drift apart again, and then maybe you meet 3 days later or 4 days later. And at one of the social events along the way, perhaps in some of the towns or at Tafside, where we ended up meeting, I thought it would be great. I'd definitely come back and do it again if I have the possibility.
Yeah. So you find it, do you think it would be enjoyable for your fellow countrymen? Is it the sort of thing that you hikers that you know
for
that
sure
home would
for
enjoy?
Sure. Yeah, for sure. I think I was the only Dane this year doing it, but I know of a couple of others that's been over here doing it, and I'll help advertise it in my country now and say, go do the TGO. It's a wonderful experience, a beautiful landscape, wonderful nature, very varied actually. That's one of the things, you have that really wet western country with really boggy terrain, and then you get into the middle of Cairngorm Mountains and it's a little bit drier perhaps, and then as you progress further east it becomes more and more civilized in a way and also drier.
And here we are,
beautiful weather.
Here we are at the seaside. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's almost like the Mediterranean here, except a little colder.
So I understand you've had a lot more experience walking in Norway and northern Scandinavia. How, for my listeners, how does walking in Scotland compare to that type of terrain? And is it remote? Is it similar to Scotland?
I'd say that you can. One of the things I really enjoyed about Scotland is that you sort of go from a town and then you're like 10 minutes, 15 minutes perhaps, and then you're in the wild. And you can get the same in Scandinavia, but you don't come down again. You don't cross over a mountain and then you're back in a city like you kind of do in Scotland, because you can go up a mountain, cross a valley and then on, and then you'll hit a town, or you can be in a town or in a pub later on in that evening. It's not really the same in Scandinavia. You go into the wild and then you are in the wild, and you'll have to go back out or cross a really far distance to get back out again. So in that regard, it's not really the same, but the landscape is maybe a bit of the same. You get higher mountains in Scandinavia than you do in Scotland, but the trails, I would say, I found that when you come here in Scotland, at least, then that a trail, you see it on the map, and when you come to it and you think, where is it? It's supposed to be here, and then you see this sort of faint animal track, and you think, okay, that's the trail. And you follow that for a little while, and then it disappears. And you go looking for it again, and you find it maybe a couple of hundred meters along the way, and see, it's just this faint animal track, and you follow that. So you have to navigate a little bit more. Where if you go off trail in Scandinavia, it'll be the same. But a lot of the hiking trails in Scandinavia are well marked, either by a sign or a cairn or something. So you're not unsure about being on the trail so much. But of course, that's if you want to go off trail in Scandinavia, you can do the same, and it'll be more or less. But I'd say that the nature is similar.
Okay.
So if you enjoy Scotland, you'll enjoy northern Scandinavia, and vice versa.
That's what I was coming to, really. If I wanted to go there, would I find it, I think, as easy as you found it to come to Scotland, start somewhere and finish somewhere following a trail? Would I find it fairly easy?
Yeah, for sure. If you can hike in Scotland, you can hike in northern Scandinavia as well. No problem. And again, as I said, vice versa.
Okay.
I did look maybe more at my map on this TGO than
well,
I
that's
would
understandable.
Usually,
yeah.
usually do maybe yeah. in Scandinavia, but that's because it was new for me and I didn't want to really take a wrong turn somewhere.
So the final question is a bit of a lowball question, but what has been your best piece of equipment and your worst piece of equipment?
I'll start with the worst, perhaps. I have two, because I have one piece of equipment that I haven't used at all, which was I thought it would be really wet and cold, and it was wet, but it wasn't as cold. So I brought a pair of hydroskin socks that I thought I would wear while fording rivers and maybe in boggy areas and so on and so on to keep my feet warm. But I found it, well, you get wet feet, that cannot be helped. But I never used the hydroskin socks, so it wasn't that cold actually, and I managed to stay warm without. So that's maybe the worst piece of equipment that I brought, because I didn't use it. But the second worst was my mat, my sleeping mat. I blew a mat last year, and I didn't want to buy a new one, and I had one on the shelf back home, and it was like only for torso size. And I brought that, figuring, well, it'll keep me okay. And but it, you know, I've gotten too old, too lazy to have a torso map. So I definitely regretted not bringing a full length one.
Okay, Yeah. Okay. So that's the comfort factor. What about the best piece of equipment? What's the one that you're most pleased with?
The best piece of equipment. Well, I like my pack. Actually, it carries weight well. But I would say that all of my equipment was the best, because my equipment is a system, so I can't really do without one. If one part is missing, then I'm miserable. So generally, I would say the things I brought, because they worked. They got me from the East Coast to the West Coast in a safe manner and fairly comfortable along the way. So all of it, but.
And so what's the name of the pack?
It's a Sierra Designs. You know, Andrew Skirker helped design it some years ago. When it came out in the US, I was lucky enough to be in the US, so I bought one and brought it back to Denmark with me. It's not my... I have several packs, but it's the pack I use when I need something a little more volume, and it just carries weight well. So it was perfect for my TGO.
My thanks to Ken and Niels for joining in, and to you, of course, for downloading and hopefully enjoying this series recorded during the 2018 TGO Challenge. I think this will probably be the last one I record relating to the event, with 10 crossings now and 60 podcasts all related to it under my belt, as it were. There are many more places and subjects and discussions to be had relating to self-powered travel. However, by all means check out the back catalogue of 60-odd podcasts on theoutdoorsstation.co.uk. There's many more trips and interviews there to listen to inspire you to perhaps join in the future. While you're over on the website, if you haven't done so already, please join my newsletter group, found over on the right-hand side of the website itself, as I'm putting together a small select panel to take the Outdoor Station forward into the world of live streaming. But more of that later, or even in the newsletter itself. If you're interested in joining the TGO Challenge in the future, please keep an eye out for the October issue of TGO Magazine. Or if you're outside of the UK, you can contact them direct online and ask for more information on how to join in with all the fun. So my thanks to all the challengers I've interviewed in the past. It's a great event, very, very unique, and one well worth getting under your belt at some stage. So until the next podcast, folks, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.